24. Richie grows up. I could say the same of being Clint's brother. As different as we are, and as divergent as our paths have sometimes been, I can't get enough of his unique, brilliant Clint Howard brain. There is no one else like him. I adore listening to him speak and watching him act. I'm far from alone in this. Clint has routinely received significant parts in my films, as the flight controller Cy Liebergott in Apollo 13, for example, and as the floor manager in Frost Nixon. The fans love him and want to see more of him. A question I frequently get from strangers when I meet them in public places is, "Will Clint be in your next movie?" There's always a happy glint of recognition in viewers' eyes when he shows up on screen. My acting career was winding down when I decided to visit Clint on the set of Rock and Roll High School in 1979. I wanted to check out what he was doing with my old compadre, Alan Arkush, and the other Cormanites with whom I had worked. When I showed up, Roger himself happened to be around. He was in a good mood. "Ron, how fortuitous that you would be here today," he said. "Come to my office." When we got there, he asked me to take a seat. I just sold the TV rights to Grand Theft Auto to CBS for $1.1 million, he announced. "That makes your 7.5% of the net profits look pretty good." "And it makes my 92.5% look fucking fabulous." I was still a ways from being anything resembling a Hollywood player, but this was a start. I was learning to be more assertive, to advocate for myself more. When the sixth season of Happy Days was about to begin in 1978, I decided that enough was enough and played hardball with the network. On a lawyer's advice, I held out from the first day's work, demanding a salary commensurate with my workload and the show's level of success. Cheryl and I spent the day at Disneyland instead of Stage 19 at Paramount, to keep me distracted from the proceedings. But I couldn't help but be nervous. As soon as we got off the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, I scooted to a payphone to check in and see how negotiations were going. The news was good. ABC agreed to redo my contract so that I was paid $15,000 per episode for the next two seasons and $20,000 per episode for my final season. The deal didn't close until the following morning, though, so I arrived at work 2 hours later than the call time. When I walked in, the whole cast applauded. I loved my Happy Days family, but I was nearing the time to move on. I was fond of the show's original premise that it was about a family living in Milwaukee in the 1950s. This became less of a guiding principle as the seasons progressed. Anson was trying to launch a singing career and stopped cutting his hair short. The extraordinarily gifted Robin Williams joined us for one amazing episode as the shaggy-haired, center-parted Mork. He had traveled to Milwaukee from a place called Ork, which I guess meant the late 70s. This guest appearance quickly evolved into a hit series for Robin and Gary Marshall. And in the show's fifth season, we opened with an implausible three-episode arc in which the whole gang traveled from Milwaukee to Southern California, where a pompous local bully challenged Fonzie to a water skiing competition. We shot the exterior scenes in Malibu. My biggest concern that day was how sunburned I was getting. We pale redheads are helpless at the beach. But my fellow redhead, Donnie Most, also hiding from the sun, was more concerned by the script. We were sitting next to each other as he paged through it. "This script, Ron, what do you think of it?" Donnie said. "I don't know, Donnie. The writers know what they're doing. I'm sure it'll work," I said. Donnie paused and then held the script open, pointing to a specific page. "So, Fonzie, he's jumping a shark now?" He actually said those words years before they became a cultural catchphrase. Donnie innately sensed that something was conceptually amiss, that maybe, just maybe, the storylines were going a little too far. It must be noted, however, that the Jump the Shark episode was a ratings juggernaut, and that Happy Days remained a roaring success, lasting six seasons beyond that one. When my seven-year contract was up, I didn't rule out staying on with Happy Days for a little longer. ABC offered me a financially generous new deal. But I had recently made the acquaintance of a remarkable NBC executive named DeAnn Barkley, one of the first women to hold real power in the TV industry. DeAnn had been impressed by Grand Theft Auto and believed in me as a fledgling director. Through her, I struck up an informal relationship with NBC that led me to produce and direct three modestly budgeted family-friendly television movies over the next 3 years, all made while Happy Days was on hiatus. As such, Cheryl and I never got the chance in this period to take time off for a real vacation, but doing those films helped me further hone my chops and build my confidence as a director. So when ABC and I were in negotiations to stay on Happy Days, I asked them if their offer could be amended to include the opportunity to direct some TV movies and perhaps a feature for Paramount, our parent company. They turned down this request. The response I received was, "We're happy to hear your ideas, but we don't make blind deals like that." NBC, on the other hand, offered me a straight producing and directing deal for three more TV films, a series pilot, and partial financing for a feature film, no acting required. The financial guarantees were paltry compared to ABC's. Paramount's chief of TV, Gary Nardino, couldn't believe I was contemplating NBC's offer. "Ron," he said, "did you do the math?" I had, but at that point I knew where my heart lay. My negotiations with the networks went right down to the wire. It wasn't until the day that the Happy Days cast reconvened for its eighth season in the fall of 1980 that the NBC deal went through officially, sealing my future. I knew the number of the payphone on the floor of Stage 19 at Paramount. I called it and asked to speak to Henry. "Ron, where are you?" he said when he picked up the receiver. "You're supposed to be here." "It's going to hit the press in about 10 minutes, but I wanted to tell you first, Henry. I'm not coming back. I'm going to direct full time." I heard a soft groan. Henry went quiet for a moment. Then he brightened. "You'll be unbelievable at it, Ron. Unbelievable," he said. "Go with God."